Francis Leachie on this Saturday morning. Sean Callanan is our digital sports guru, always talking about sport in the digital world each Saturday, and he's with us again in his very specially designed Collingwood Twitter T-shirt. It's a ripper, Sean. I know that you've gone above and beyond to put all the Twitter handles of your favourite magpies on the T-shirt, sort of like John George Ringo style. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Frank. And yeah, it's always good coming in after a win on a Friday night.
That's hilarious, that's true. What have we got? We've got at SP underscore 10, Scott Pendlebury, at DT underscore 13, Dale Thomas, at Dids underscore 04, Alan Dodak, at Swan Dane. It goes on and on and on. Nice work.
I'll take a pic for it and tweet it after the show.
But we're talking about this. It's interesting today because sports clubs are and some aren't, I guess, getting a handle, no pun intended, on using digital space to maximise the fan experience and also, I guess, to promote their football clubs and sporting organisations.
Yeah, so, you know, we started Sports Geek to pretty much promote that clubs needed a sports geek, so someone to manage the sports side but also understand the tech and manage the community. And so more and more clubs are getting people into those roles. So to manage all the social platforms, help produce content for the website, produce video, liaise with the fans, all that kind of stuff.
Who were the pace setters? Who were the trendsetters that got there first, who got it early?
Oh, so from, you know, there was a couple in the States that, you know, jumped on different platforms early. Like we've talked about before, the NBA jumped on board with Facebook, Twitter. They just got 5 million followers on their Twitter account. But it is a developing space. And I suppose when you're looking for someone to be in that role, there's sort of three things that we look at. And we've actually, you know, there are three C's. And so the first thing they've got to produce is content, because all these social media platforms require content all the time.
It's a beast that just needs to be fed.
It does need to be fed. And the thing is, with footy clubs and with, you know, media, football media, there is so much content available. So it is a matter of, one, producing the content, but it's also about finding the content out of nothing. So it might be as simple as the boys are getting on the bus. That's something that the fans never see. They never get that insider feel. Pull your phone out, take that shot, and you send it out via Instagram, as we've talked about, or send it out to Facebook, so the fans get that insider access.
It seems innocuous enough, but what's the value add for the club and what's the value for the fan in that experience? You work in this area. What are you finding? What are they telling you?
Well, from the fans' point of view, and the way we sort of pitch it for the, you know, we call them social media executioners because it sounds cooler on your business card, is that you're trying to all your content has to have a goal. And for most teams, your goal is to get that fan from sitting on the couch in their pajamas watching the TV to coming to a game, to becoming a member, to being there rain, hail, or shine, to handing over your Visa card and you're automatically renewing each year. So from a social and a digital point of view, you're trying to fast-track them on that journey. And the thing is, that's what social allows you to do, because you get to talk to the fan every single day.
Does it feel like, you and I both use this space a lot, do that people feel like it's an authentic experience?
Yes, yeah. I mean, they do. There are some that sort of see the people doing what they have to do as far as putting up posts and that kind of thing. But the idea is there are, you know, the fans, you know, to coin a phrase, they do like the content they're getting. And that's the thing. You can track what you are putting out on, you know, from a likes point of view, from a traffic driving back to the website point of view. So, you know, the other part of their job is to be able to manage those stats and present case studies back to the business, to their sponsors, to the club to say, this is why we're doing it and this is why it is a success.
How important is it to curate the content well? You're just not throwing stuff at the wall and hope that it'll appeal to somebody, but you've got some sort of plan or some sort of idea what works.
Yeah, so that's the second C, curation. It is you've got all this content and you've got to figure out which content is going to fit for what platform and at the right time. So, you know, something that will work, you know, if it is just a slice of life shot that gets taken, that probably fits better for that Instagram crowd that is a visual medium crowd. You know, it'll go to Twitter because Twitter fans like to see, you know, pictures are much easier to consume than an article. So that fits for that crowd. Whereas, you know, Facebook, you know, our thing is you're, from a brand perspective and from a team perspective, you're joining a personal platform. So most people in our experience are joining Facebook to connect with their family and friends, and to stalk the people I went to high school with, right? And so as a brand or a team, you're encroaching in on that space. So you've got to be respectful of that. So the other thing from a curation and how much do you post point of view, we use the movie The Hangover as an example. You wake up the next morning and you just don't know what happened. And what do most people do? They'll go and find out where they lost Macca and where they checked in on Facebook. And they want to check their feed and go, oh, that's right, we ended up there. Oh, and there's that picture that we took at that bar. And there's that. That's where they ended up. So they can go back to their feed and see that. Now, they don't want to go back in a half hungover state and see 27 updates from their team with a blow-by-blow description because it's ruining their experience of Facebook because they can't find out what their high school buddy is doing that they're just stalking because there's all this team announcements in there. So that's where the curation comes in because, you know, the fan might not unlike the team because they just can't do it in their heart. They're still a supporter. But, what's worse than that is if they hide your feed. They'll never see your posts ever again. So all the effort you're doing to engender more passion for the team, you've automatically lost them.
Which clubs and sporting organisations do you think have established the best sense of community through their efforts in these spaces?
Oh, I think there's a lot of teams doing it, you know, at varying levels. I think Twitter is a really great one from a community point of view because you can have that conversation. You can reply to fans. You can retweet their passion and their development. So that's where that community comes in, which is the third C in getting that backwards and forwards going. So guys like West Coast are doing a lot of, you know, they do random acts of the swoop. So we were talking gamification last week. They've got that gamification platform where they reward the fans for what they're doing. And they're always saying, great work, keep it up. And the fans just take that as encouragement, as a pat on the back. So there's a lot of teams, you know, tell us what the highlights are. You know, Collingwood last night was asking everyone what the highlights were and everyone was pumped after a big win. You really want to maximise those opportunities because everyone's up and about and everyone's positive. Conversely, you know,
it gets tough.
The bad stuff, if you go through, you know, a 100-point loss or you haven't had a win and you're going to have that, you know, that digital vitriol going, you know, sack the coach or I'm angry, sometimes you've just got to let that stuff breathe. And as long as it doesn't go overboard, as we saw a couple of weeks ago in the Essendon incident, and we even see the LA Lakers, you know, a player missed a crucial shot and he was getting Twitter death threats for him and his wife. As long as it doesn't go over that boundary line, you know, the fans are going to vent. And the way I sort of experienced it is if the media manager walked around the ground at the end of the game, you've lost, and wrote down everything the fans were yelling out, it would be pretty bloody depressing. So one of the things that as a guy working or a girl in that instance working in digital and sports, you've got to have a pretty tough skin. Because if someone slams the team and says, oh, you're terrible, they're not talking to you, they're not talking to the person, they're just having a go at your team. And everyone's allowed to do that. That's what sport's about.
And the world in general, we've got a minute to go. We've got a painting finish for three people who've doing great work in this space here in Australia.
Yeah, so Jess Ivers, who was formerly with Manly Seagulls and took them to the grand final from a digital perspective, now at Canterbury, does a great job with the Twitter banded backwards and forwards. Daniel Pinney, we talked about previously at the Melbourne Storm, doing a great job, you know, reaching the Melbourne sports scene with, you know, and encouraging people to follow NRL. And as I was speaking before, Matt Jepp at West Coast Eagles, doing a great job in interacting with the fans, with the swoop and having the backwards and forwards with them. Even tweets as the mascot as well, so he has to have that multiple persona of be able to tweet with different voices. So he does a really good job at that.
Good on you, Sean. Sports Geek.
Sports Geek HQ on Twitter. Sean Cullen on Twitter. Thanks very much. Didn't get to the tweets for replying to what the qualities they saw as well. So thanks a lot.